Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Today on the show, we have Dallas Jacobus of Palo, Iowa. He joins to talk about his five-year career with the Hawkeye football team that just finished up this past season, and more importantly, another career that is taking off. Many of you know Dallas's name because of the We Wave song that is an original written by him that went viral in 2019. We're going to talk all about it. Let's sit back, relax, and have a day. Let's go.
Welcome in, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 194 of the podcast. Today, we are joined by the one and only Dallas Jacobus. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the name. For more than just being a part of the Iowa Hawkeye football team, we're going to get into that. Dallas is a product of Cedar Rapids Kennedy, I believe, right?
Yes, sir.
Cougars.
Yes, sir.
And, yeah, Cougars. Along with Sean Beyer. Were you guys in the same class?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, so came into Iowa with Beyer. Just recently graduated from, I don't know when he graduated. We'll figure that out. But out of the University of Iowa, 5 years with the team, and we're excited to get into it. Dallas, more recently on the scene with his music endeavors. Dallas, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited, man.
Talk to me a little bit about how... because a lot of this is going to be about the music, because I want to highlight that. A huge part of this is us bringing on guys to kind of tell their story. And a lot of those stories are already told, right? They're at the end of a career, or they're occasionally we get a guy that's still in the league who's, you know, their journey is still the storybook's still being written. But for you, you kind of have a separation. You're kind of the first guy that we've got to highlight the football career, and then we're moving into a different avenue. So tell me about recruitment for you and how you became an Iowa Hawkeye. I know you're probably a hometown kid, and that was probably the dream, and everyone's got that story, but everyone's is unique. So tell me yours.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't really get recruited. I got accidentally discovered by Coach Morgan when he was recruiting Sean.
Welcome to the club, by the way.
Yeah. So,
hey.
We're going to call this the non-recruitment podcast. I had a really funny name the other day. That's a common story around here.
Yeah. So, Coach Morgan was actually at a track meet watching Sean do all his stuff, and he was standing over by the rings. And he saw me throwing shot put, and he's like, wow, that guy competes. And he talked to Coach White, our head coach of the football team. And, I started asking about me, and ended up inviting me out to camp, and went out to camp, you know, just did that, talked with him real quick after. And then You know, every time he'd come visit Sean at school, I would just tag in, talk with him, you know, just have a conversation. And every time he'd just be like, be patient. Called me a couple times on the phone, and I was pretty much dead set on doing track in college. I was actually getting ready to commit to Iowa to do track. And the night I was going to commit, he called my coach that day at school, because it was technically a recruiting dead period, and offered me a walk-on spot. And I was like, yep, taking it. Didn't think twice. And so, yeah, and that was kind of how I ended up at Iowa.
So you were going to,
I was about to say, I love how Coach Morgan always watching guys do a different sport other than football too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's how he finds people.
Yeah, Coach Morgan probably has stories like, yeah, I was watching this guy. He was throwing darts in a bar. And I just saw his athleticism.
Just tell by the way he steps into it, he'd be a great defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you were gonna full go to college for track then, huh? How far are you throwing the shot put back in the day?
Shot put, my PR was 60'6", and then disc, I was sitting right around, I was right under 180. I think my best was a 176, I believe. So
did you have like offers to go play or to go throw in college then?
Yeah, I had offers. I had probably 10 to 15 offers for track.
Damn.
All right, so where were you thinking about going there instead of walking on at Iowa for football?
I always wanted to be a Hawkeye. I mean, I grew up, I think my first game was when I was 6 or 7 months old. Always been a Hawkeye, so I wanted to be a Hawkeye, but I was going to commit to Iowa. But other than that, NDSU is probably the best throw school in the nation. Just thinking about going there. You know, I was in the talks with Iowa State and Nebraska a little bit. You know, it was kind of contemplating going there, but you know, I always wanted to be a Hawkeye, so that's pretty much where I was going to go from the get-go.
Wow.
Gotcha. Were any other schools looking at you for football?
It was pretty much just when Sean got recruited somewhere, they'd look at me. And I guess this is a complete hearsay. Iowa State was going to offer me, but they called Coach White, our head coach, and he was like, because they had offered me a preferred walk-on. And after Iowa offered me a preferred walk-on, apparently they were going to offer me a full ride. And they asked Coach if there was any chance of me flipping my decision. He's like, nah, it's really not worth it. Like he's going to Iowa.
That's funny.
And he's right.
Yeah, that's a rather bold statement for a coach to make, that you're going to turn down a full scholarship offer. But
hey,
he was right. I guess he was right.
He's dead right.
That's incredible that you.
Much respect. Much respect.
First of all, that loyalty. That bleed black and gold loyalty it runs strong.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that is crazy. You had a ton of offers to go throw for track, and the minute the door just creaked open for Iowa football, that was it. It sounds like there was not a lot of thought. It was easy.
No, I got off the phone with Coach Morgan. I called my mom. I was like, hey, coach just called, said I could play football at Iowa. I'm going to do it. I'm going to call him back right after I get off the phone. I'm going to be a Hawkeye. And then called Coach Morgan back before I even like left school that day, and you know, committed. So
that's incredible. I love that.
Yeah.
So this is for all three of us, because the walk-on idea is so interesting to me, like preferred walk-on, whatever, because with a scholarship, it makes sense. Like there's like a hard number that they have to go off of. Like, all right, we only have so many. We have something to go off of here. Like, we have a currency of scholarships that matters when we're thinking about offering this guy. But there is no currency with walk-ons. Yeah. They can ask anybody to walk on, and they're not really giving up a whole lot other than a roster spot. And I would love to be in on those conversations, because it literally comes down to, all right, well, should we let this guy in the door or not?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's funny that conversation has to happen on all the guys, because some of the guys we played with, I can name a few. Kevin and I can name a few all the way back to 2013. There's a few in our class. I don't know how they let them in the door.
Yeah. There's a few guys that you're like, wow.
It doesn't make any sense.
I do agree.
I think Hawkeye Nation's
honestly,
probably...
I felt like one of those kids in my freshman year.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty common for a lot of walk-ons, just regardless, you know. It's like you didn't get a scholarship and you walk in, all these guys got highly recruited and everything. It's like, do I really belong in?
Yeah.
And I think that's like your first days in the weight room or on the field where you kind of get a sense for, you know, yeah, I think I can hang with these guys kind of thing.
Yeah.
Were there any moments like that, Dallas, where you got a nice little rude awakening to Big Ten football early on? Like just pile drived into the ground, walking by a guy in the weight room, he's doing twice your weight. Like any of those that you remember?
Well, strength, I mean, I was always one of the stronger guys in my class. So in the weight room, I felt I was super confident. But I remember our first skills and drills. Somehow I got paired up with Jaleel.
Jaleel, get your pads down.
I don't know what I did to piss him off, but he just grabbed me by my face. And I just remember feeling like a fucking puppy. I was like, what am I getting myself into? And then Kev, you might remember this. My first camp, I think I fought about twice a day and I got jumped by the O-line at least one of those times.
I do remember you weirdly getting in an amount of fights. I'm like, why is Dallas always in fights? You're definitely not a guy like, you know, I don't know how to say it. So
yeah,
there's some guys in the locker room where you like, yeah, man, if I get a chance to fight this person, and you know, Drake's like one of those people. It's like you get in with Drake, like, yeah, we're throwing hands with Drake.
100%.
Dallas was definitely not one of those people, you know?
Basically, there's like good guys. There's like real good hearted guys. And then there's guys that got a little bit of asshole to them, a little bit of douchebag. Mm. There's just a little bit where it would feel good to knock them down a step. And I'm probably one of those guys. I was just never in a position to fight. Drake, definitely one of those guys. Kevin, even probably one of those guys. Dallas, you're not one of those guys. You were always like, I don't know. It's a vibe. You know, you can always tell from a guy the way he just interacts with people. Like, oh, that guy's just a good dude. And Dallas, that was you from the beginning. At least that's the feeling I had on you. I think that's what Kevin is getting at. What was the goal? You know, you get your foot in the door. And for a lot of kids, we talked to Brandon Bishop actually a few episodes ago, and he said, like,
I heard that one.
Yeah, once he stepped in the door, it was like, you know,
there's didn't, nothing to lose.
Yeah, he it didn't like, keep him from working hard, but it was like, hey, he made it.
Exactly.
Like, the dream was realized. How did you approach that mentality and kind of your personal goals throughout your football career once you got that foot in the door?
Yeah, it was always kind of just reaching the next step. I mean, freshman year, I was just like, you know, shit, I'm here. Like, what do I do now? Like, this is what I've always wanted my whole life. Like, what do I do now? And then I kind of had to, you know, start, you know, being a contributing factor on the scout team. And so I did that. And then, you know, I started being that. And I was like, now I want to win scout team player of the week. And then I did that and I was like, all right, now I want to go over to the varsity field and, you know, contribute there. And then I finally got there. My senior year is finally when I got on the varsity field and I played 2 years of special teams, you know, that mic position, highly coveted. Everybody wants to be it, you know, just stand there and get.
Someone has
absolutely least desirable. The absolutely least desirable position on the entire field.
Makes for some incredible film.
Oh God. Yeah. It was so I finally got into that mindset.
Well, Dallas, what was your first year? Was it 2015?
My first year was 2016. So after the undefeated season.
16. Oh
yeah.
Gotcha. So 2015, that coveted position that you think about. I'll never forget Jake Hewitt I think he was either Mike or the Sam or something for the punt protection.
He was the Mike.
And
yeah.
Did they show you the clip of him getting his face mask bent in by the defensive lineman from Indiana?
Yeah. It's fun.
It's not
it's just
fun.
A good time.
It's
iron bars on his helmet were bent in. So,
I mean,
I broke a helmet. I cracked a helmet.
You did?
Yeah, I cracked one of my helmets. Yeah.
Oh my God. The job description is literally, you become the human wall.
Yeah, exactly. And doesn't matter who's coming, but the hardest dude I ever got hit by, I don't know why he slipped my name. He blocked a punt in the NFL. He went to Michigan. It was number 29, the long haired dude. And like the first time I saw him lining up, like he was my dude. I was like, shit, like, I don't have a defensive tackle. Like, I'm so happy right now. And I'm sitting there and I'm seeing him sprinting. I'm like, oh fuck. And, and just,
this boy's coming.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I learned real quick that, you know, small guys, they move a lot faster and they can definitely hit. And I mean, there's a reason he's in the league blocking punts and field goals. I mean, the guy just, he was a missile.
What was it like for you, describe the experience of, you know, you get your foot in the door and then early on, it's like that first time you address a game is a huge thing. Like you see your name on the back of the jersey in the locker room, you get to do locker room check, right? What was it like the first time for you knowing you're going into a game and you're in the game plan? Like you're on the first team of a, you know, you're in the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was Mike on the punt and, you know, the scheme's really not that hard. It's like stand there. I got two or three, depending on who the guard points out. And I'm sitting there and Coach Woods calls the punt. And I like everything left my mind. I was like, where the fuck do I line up? Like I was shitting my, I think it was Brady. I literally like, I just followed Brady, like a puppy. I literally just followed Brady and I was standing there and I was like, what's the punt? Like I completely forgot everything running out there. And Brady told me the punt. I got the protection and yeah, I was shitting my pants. I had no clue. Like it was just like I had prepared, like I felt well prepared. Like I knew the whole, every punt we could do. I knew my, my job. I knew what adjustments we'd make, like Woody, all that. Like in practice, I was humming, had it down, no problem. Coach Woods calls. I go, what is he speaking English right now? Like, what's going on? Like, it just, I everything went out the door. It was unbelievable.
That's fantastic.
Your first play can be a surreal feeling because, like, you've never played in front of that many people before. I don't know if it's never. That or if it's just the fact that it's Big Ten football or the fact,
yeah,
like, for you and me, Dallas, that you spent the last 2 years like not playing or something like that, and now you're finally in the game again. It's like I haven't played a football game, an actual football game, in several years now. I don't know what it is, but it's pretty. It's a surreal feeling.
I think for me it was like, okay, I've done this in practice a million times, right? And I did it in high school a lot too. But now my direct performance on this single play actually factors into the equation of this football game. And going from none of those plays to the first one is hard. Then after that, it gets easier, but it's like, ooh, that first one is just hard to get out of the way.
It wears off pretty quickly.
Once you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. After that first game, it was fine. I mean, you kind of get in your zone, you get in your groove and you just go out there and do it.
As a guy who, you know, you listen to that Brandon Bishop podcast and I think of you in a lot of the same ways, Dallas, a guy who just selfless dude, right? And to some extent, Kevin and I as well, we all kind of know this, but like none of us were CJ Beathard or Jersey Jewell. Our faces aren't on the stadium, you know?
Exactly.
But what did it mean to you to represent your hometown, your family, just being an Iowa kid in the Iowa jersey and getting to play 5 years for the Hawkeyes? What does that mean to you?
Yeah. I mean, it was a dream come true. Like everything I could ever ask for. And then some, I mean, you know, getting to work under coaches like, you know, Coach Morgan, Coach Ferentz, like just legendary guys, Coach Parker, Coach Wallace, Coach Bell, like just guys that you know what they're doing, like have a great reputation for a reason, and, you know, getting to know them on a personal level, you know, spending countless hours with them, and then, you know, getting to play with guys like Josie Jewell, who a year before was just a guy on the TV that I was like, holy shit, like, it's Josie Jewell, or like being in the locker room in the same pod as CJ Beathard. It was just like, it was surreal. The whole first year was just surreal. Just like, I really had to be like, am I really here? Like, am I actually doing this right now? And, you know, it was just a dream come true. Like, you know, waking up every morning doing what I wanted to do the past 18 years of my life. And it was just amazing.
Did you have any tough days where you woke up and the dream wasn't as shiny? You know, there was that,
yeah.
That silver lining was like, oh yeah, I understand that what the opportunity I have right here, but today specifically, I really don't want to go and, you know, get driven off the ball for 2 hours in the scout team. Like, was there any day, did you ever question it, or were you going to be a start to finish guy the whole time?
No, it was about a month every year around August. If you guys know what I'm talking about, camp.
Yeah, weird.
I absolutely hated camp. It's weird.
It's weird that you get those seasonal feelings.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, it's like all football, like, you know, what every guy like dreams of, but I hated it. I think it was the hotel really that got me, like just being absolutely secluded from everything and everyone. And, you know, you're up with the sun and you go to bed when it's dark and, you know, you have nothing, you have no more energy in your body to do anything but football. And like, I'd maybe talk to my parents once a week, you know, send a couple texts to my buddies. Like, it's just, camp was just awful for me, but I knew like that's part of it. And, you know, I had to wake up, I had to put in my work. And, you know, after camp was done, once we got out of the hotel, it was just like, it was like the best feeling ever. Like, you had your freedom back, and, you know, I had my own bed. But, you know, other than camp, really, it was just like, there was days where it was just rough, but it was like, you had to check yourself. Like, I'm waking up doing what I wanted to do for my whole life, and, you know, working with the best of the best that there is out there. And there's days where I really had to check myself. But yeah, other than camp, I loved it.
I love it.
Yep. Camp sucks. Just wait until you, your first August without a camp though. It's a weird feeling. It's actually a weird feeling.
We didn't have a camp this year, and it was weird. It was super weird. Like that first game, it was like, where did this come from? Like, even though it was later, like, what was it, 3-4 weeks into the season, like, it just didn't feel like it was game time yet. Like, I just didn't feel like I just didn't feel real. Like, it was weird.
I want
to talk about this too. So in, I think July it is, they announced that, Big Ten's going to cancel the season. What's the immediate reaction from the team?
Oh, dude, it was like just finding out that like your puppy died or something. Like just the air, and like everybody just breathed. It was just like everybody's deflated at once. Like, it was awful. Like, you know, you put in so much time, you put in so much work, and we knew it was going to happen. Like, it wasn't a surprise, but it was just like, you know, there was that small sliver of hope that we had that, you know, maybe it'll get better. Maybe we'll be able to have a season. And then hearing that they're pulling the plug is just like, shit. And like, I remember that day my roommates and I were like, well, you guys want to fucking drink?
Yes.
Like, we had no clue what to do with our lives. Like, we just didn't know what to do. And so, yeah, we literally just drank in our living room. Like, we were just lost. We didn't know what to do.
I think that's the only Iowa response that you could have, right?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely kept Bush in business. Yep. Yeah, we kept Bush in business over the course.
Bad day to be a Bush.
Dude, they tweet that every Saturday. I retweet it every time.
I know.
I love it. I love
that. Yeah, so I mean there was I remember they're talking about canceling it, and then there's like a slight feeling of hope that the Big Ten wasn't going to do it after everyone started tweeting out like we want to play and everything.
Yeah.
And then they brought down the hammer. It's like, I don't know. So what was it like during the interim before, after they canceled it and before they announced that they were going to bring it back? Like, what did you guys do? What was the feeling? Like, what even happened?
Well, it was just like, you know how in like, I don't even want to say spring ball, because it wasn't like spring ball where you're like practicing, but there's no game, there's no bowl, there's like nothing to really look forward to. And like, it's just not as intense, you know, like it's just the like external forces aren't driving you as hard. Like it's all internal, like what you have in you, your drive to get better is what's feeding it. And it was just kind of like, we were showing up just like, especially the seniors, just like, we did it. And, you know, we got all our weight and we did all that, but it was just like, what's the point? Like I may never play football ever again in my life. Like, and I guess I wish I would have seen it.
General managers ask questions to find the right players. Like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
From the point of view of a younger guy that has a lot of, you know, like future ahead of them and, you know, a lot of time to get better. And, you know, this season wasn't everything to them. But you know, for me at least, it was like, well, fuck, like I may be doing this just to do this, and I may actually never play football ever again in my life.
Yeah, that's heavy. Everything that went down this summer, and then COVID, all of that together, just a really, really,
it's a shit storm,
volatile off season for you guys.
Yeah,
and. Hey everyone, before we get started today, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, question and answers with Blue Wire's top podcasters, could be us, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and every other platform. And the best part, you get all this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance to this program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
You guys start the season, and I'd love to hear your opinion. You have those two losses, two games that I'm sure you guys look back at as, damn, we really could have won those games. And
yeah,
I would love to hear in your mind the difference between the Hawks in week one and two this past season, and then what transpired after the big, I mean, you guys crushed Michigan State and then kind of just didn't look back. Talk about that.
So for something you guys would be able to relate to, it was after we just got absolutely pounded by Penn State and we had Michigan the next week. That feeling after the Penn State loss was the exact feeling we had week two. It was just like, shit, like, is this really what we're going to be? And then like it was, we were at a point of, you know, blame COVID, call it in, you know, say, you know, it's whatever, it's our COVID season. Like COVID did this, COVID did that. Or are you going to buy in and you're going to nut up and just fucking do it and, you know, become the team that you can be. And it was that Monday. It was just like, you know, we figured it out and we did it. And, you know, it was, practice became a lot more fun after that first win. And, you know, complacency was never a thing. You know, those first two games, we were really trying to find out our new identity. You know, after the summer and everything, it was just, you know, we were kind of in shambles a little bit. And, you know, I really think that it brought the team closer, but we were really trying to find, you know, who this team was going to be. And after that second loss, I think we just decided, you know, we're going to be Iowa Hawkeyes. We're going to play Iowa football and we're going to be gritty and we're going to fight every play. And, you know, we just kind of figured it out and, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. You're firing me up. I'm ready. Woo! Nah, seriously, dude. That's, I mean, it's what it looked like. Right. And it makes sense. What happened kind of made sense. It was, man, from the outside, from some, you know, from me and Kevin's perspective, I think Kevin and I would be the correct English way to say that. Not Kevin and me and Kevin, but Kevin and
yeah.
I.
Yeah, we're washed up walk-ons, not philosophers.
Yeah, I wasn't a freaking English major. from our perspective of people who have been there and had control and had a piece in it, and now you're on the outside and you just have to watch things transpire. Man, it was tough to be like, ooh, they're so close. They got to figure something. Like, it wasn't an effort thing. It was just you didn't have the right sauce, right?
Exactly. We didn't have the sauce.
Didn't have the right sauce. All right,
Gervas.
I'm not fake juice Gervas. Which, by the way, did you guys see the TikTok of him?
I did not.
I did, yeah.
It has like 15 million views on TikTok.
No shit.
Yeah, it's him and his wife at their ceremony. Anyway, so yeah, that was crazy. And then for you guys to go on and win six games, and it was unfortunate you guys didn't get to have the bowl season, but a good way for y'all to go out. And kind of a weird thing, right? Like, you guys technically have another year because of the COVID season, but everybody had to make that decision on their own. And there's some guys that are coming back. There's some guys that aren't. What was that like for you to put football behind and then transition into, you know, talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to be Iowa, Hawkeye my whole life. And, you know, I was there and, I did my 5 years, you know, I did the thing, like I did the thing. I just kind of been like walking a tightrope with music. You know, what can I do? What can I do? And, you know, music was really starting to take off. And I was just kind of at a point where, you know, I'm sufficed with what I did at Iowa. I'm proud of what I did. You know, yeah, there's things that I wish I could do over, but, you know, I did the thing and, I'm damn proud of it. You know, it was just time to turn the page and, move on to the next chapter of my life. And, you know, so it was a hard decision. Don't get me wrong. But you know, it was, I feel like I made the right one.
I feel like
it's just time, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can only do it for so long. It's
Kevin,
I don't remember, for some reason, it feels like to me that I knew about Dallas, your singing ability before the song went viral. The Wave song went viral. Did you sing like for something when we were still there? I don't remember. Like,
no. All right. Well, Josh and I would always sing in the shower. Like, for what, I don't even know why, we'd always sing. He'd be like, Josh would just be like, hey, cause I would always just like sing a little bit in the shower.
Yeah, mess around.
One day, you know, Josh would just belt in the shower. I mean, Josh can sing. And he's like, oh, you can sing. He was like, show me something. So, Yeah. So then Josh and I would, we'd always just sing and stuff in the shower, but I beatboxed in a bowl prep when we were doing that, like, minute to win it thing.
Yep. I remember that.
Yep. So, remember that one. Yep.
I believe at that point it was like, oh shit, Dallas is beatboxing. And then it was someone else was like, yeah, he's like pretty gifted, like musically, like he can sing. Mm-hmm. He was in like choir, show choir. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I knew about this.
That might've been Miguel.
It probably was Miguel.
Miguel was my freshman year. Was my freshman year camp roommate.
Talk about Miguel. What do you think about our guy?
Miguel. You can't describe him. There's no way to describe Miguel. Miguel is, he's just Miguel. I mean, just a goofy dude. I mean, he's pretty quiet until
he's not
comfortable.
Until he feels okay talking. I feel. And then he doesn't show up.
Like I read a whole encyclopedia. Yeah. After my freshman camp, I felt like I'd read the whole encyclopedia on soccer and goalies and Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dark Souls.
I mean, the dude is just a walking book of soccer knowledge and Dark Soul. I probably spent an hour a night watching Dark Souls videos. And like I almost started playing the game. I never played video games in my life, and I was like, dude, this sounds fucking awesome. Like I might have to do it.
Miguel
and
is
like, yeah. I mean, Miguel, he's
relentless.
He's unique.
Mm-hmm. He's absolutely relentless. He doesn't let up, and people could like only handle so much of him. And then I would be like, yes, that is what I deal with every day. Like I hang out with him every day when we're at the facility. And it was, I mean, Miguel and being friends with him is a skill. He is one of the most unique characters I've ever come across in my 26 and a half years of life. And I'm glad that I know him. He is, he's a machine.
Yeah. And I'm glad he was my freshman year roommate, dude. Like it was actually, I looking back, it was so good that like, just not talk about football once we got back to the hotel.
Yeah.
Like having him as a roommate, it was that escape for, you know, the hour and a half before we went to bed.
Yeah, that's perfect. You write this song, and from what I read in like, I read a few articles that you've done interviews, and you weren't going to release it, or like you had written it and or something. Like talk about the blowing up of this We Wave song. And for those listening, I'm sure you guys have all heard it. I'm going to outro this podcast with the song as long as Dallas is okay with it.
Oh, 100%.
And so you guys can listen to it at the end. I listened to it 3 or 4 times while in prep for this podcast, and I get goosebumps every time, dude. It's so good.
Thank you.
How did it become a thing?
Yeah. So it was after I hurt my back really bad. I want to say it was before it was either the Outback Bowl or the Pinstripe Bowl. And, so I really didn't practice at all that whole year. You know, I was hobbling around like a grandpa for a few months, and I was kind of in a dark spot, and we got that $400 gift card from the, from the bowl game. And I was like, yeah, might as well just buy a guitar. So went out and bought a guitar and started teaching myself some chords and learning some songs, you know, just for fun. And then I was up in Minnesota with the buyer. We were at his cabin on a fishing trip, and the chorus kind of hit me. And I was like, yeah, I should finish that. So, I mean, I took the 5 chords I knew and finished the song with my brother, Todd Gusta. And like you said, I was not gonna, you know, I showed it to my family and my roommates and stuff. And, you know, obviously they're gonna be like, yeah, that's good. Like, I mean, they're my friends and my family. They're not gonna be like, yeah, dude, that's awful. Yeah, exactly. And I really didn't think that it did the Wave justice, for being honest. Like, you know, obviously I'd never been in the hospital. I didn't know that point of view. I mean, I'd visited a bunch, you know, just through with the football team. Like, we do that stuff all the time. And I really honestly didn't think it did the Wave justice. And then I was at Byers family. They do like a family get together, like a big potluck and a bonfire and stuff. And his mom was like, hey, can you help me set up the speaker so we can play some music? And I plugged in a microphone. She said she had an announcement to make. And she handed me the microphone. She's like, all right, now you got to sing this. And his cousin
threw you on the spot.
Yeah. She scanned my ass, dude. And his cousin videotaped it while I sang it. And she put it on Facebook. And I think I went to bed and it had like 2,000 views and probably about 7-8 hours. I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. Like, that's awesome. And then I wake up and it was at like 20,000 views. I had like 100 friend requests, a bunch of messages, like a million notifications. And I think that one video ended up getting like 300,000. And then the university posted a video, ended up getting over 600,000. And then there's other videos that got, you know, 10,000, 20,000. So like overall, I ended up getting a million views. And I was like, holy shit, I might have something here. And that's kind of why I started actually doing music at all. Like, I really had no plans to actually pursue music. And yeah, it was just crazy how it happened.
That was that this past summer or was that two summers?
No, that was 2 summers ago.
Okay. Two summers ago. And then ever since, you've kind of, at least from following you, obviously, I don't know your day-to-day life, but ever since then, it's kind of been like, it seems like that's the move, right? I'm sure that's what it's been like for you is it's calling you a little bit. You got to go try and make something out of it. So when did it, I mean, obviously, when did it start to matriculate in your mind that I think that this is what I want to pursue? I want to give this a shot.
Yeah. I mean, I started just writing more songs and putting them out, you know, just got good feedback there, over quarantine. You know, I really had nothing better to do.
Yeah.
Than, you know, play guitar. And I'm sure my roommates were tired of it, but I mean, I was playing guitar probably 8 hours a day.
Jeez.
And, I ended up writing, like, I think I've got probably pretty close to 20 songs right now. And I was posting them on Instagram and TikTok and everything. And, I'm not supposed to tell a story, but I guess I didn't really sign any papers, so fuck it. I had a dude from American Idol, like, message me, and he was like, hey man, like, I love your stuff. Would you like an opportunity to perform for American Idol? And I was like, all right, this is bullshit. And like, I looked it up. I was like, I looked him up. I was like, maybe this is a bullshit. So I messaged him back and I was like, yeah, he didn't ask for money. He didn't ask for my credit card number. So, I mean, might as well take the shot. Ended up auditioning for American Idol. And because I didn't think football was going to be a thing this year once they shut it down. So I went through a few rounds of auditions, passed them all. And they invited me out to California for the live auditions down there. And like they're basically, they wanted me to sing all my original songs on there. And, you know, football got brought back and I was just like, you know what, I've got one season, like, I'm going to see it through. And so I ended up not doing American Idol, but I made it through all the auditions and, you know, had the opportunity to be on it. But so that was kind of, all right, holy shit, I'd actually be okay at this. And, you know, once the season was over, I had one show booked in Palo, my hometown, and I get there and I guess I was working that day. I worked, like, I think I had a 10-hour day. I left work at 6 and I checked my phone. My brother's like, hey, like, tell your roommates to get here. The place is packed. Like, they have limited capacity. And then I guess at like 6:30, the cops showed up and gave him a ticket because it was over capacity. So then they just let everybody in. And I got there an hour before the show and the place was absolutely packed an hour before the show.
Wow.
And yeah, it was crazy. So I played that show and, you know, I booked one more show, a couple weeks after that. And then after that show, you know, just like people started just messages poured in. And, right now I'm booked through April, but, I'm working on putting a band together. So I stopped booking stuff, but like, it's just crazy how, you know, it's just taking off right now.
That is insane, my man.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Gosh, that's incredible. I follow you. I see the tweets. Like you're out every weekend grinding. I've seen like other guys that show up and like are taking Snapchat videos of you while you're playing. What a wild ride. Just like a rocket ship, it just feels like. And yeah. I read somewhere that the goal is to somehow, some way make it to Nashville eventually and get down there.
Yeah. So right now, you know, I was planning on moving out there, you know, in the next couple of months, but, you know, Nashville's just kind of shut down. Like nobody's touring right now. So the labels are just kind of hemorrhaging money. Like they're really not bringing in any money. So, I mean, they're not really looking to sign anybody that, you know, doesn't already have a name for themselves. So, so right now it's just kind of like, I'm just going to stay home, you know, close to my resources and stuff. But, I actually just started talking with a guy out of Miami who is a huge in the music industry. You know, met with Suge Knight when Death Row was going down and, you know, kind of helped him keep that above ground and worked with Ozzy Osbourne. His dad worked with, what's his name? I did it my way. Well, I can't think of his name. Yeah. So like, you know, just really big in the music industry. Frank Sinatra, gosh.
How do you
not
know
exactly
who Frank Sinatra is?
I know Frank Sinatra, it just slipped my mind. But so yeah, he's just really big in the music industry, and his friend messaged me and was like, hey, like this guy's kinda out of music right now, but I think he could help you out, and you mind if I show him? I was like, yeah, sure. So I ended up talking with him, and he wants to get me down to Florida and, you know, just meet, and hopefully he'll end up being my manager. But just this last week, he put me in touch with a vocal coach who he's a Broadway actor and singer.
Wow.
You know, does a lot of the lead roles, and I'm doing vocal lessons with him. So it's just like, it's just crazy how fast everything's going.
That is absolutely insane. What was the plan before all this started? What was the plan? Because it's funny how you look back, and I'm sure you sit there on some days and you're like, this was not where I saw my life going. This was, you know, what was Dallas Jacobus going to do before this?
Yeah, I mean, my dream job was to be an occupational therapist. I wanted to work with special needs kids. You know, I was coming into college. Like I knew that's what I wanted to do. The problem is just, there's nothing that, you know, you can't really make a living off of most of the interactions that they have. And occupational therapy was just like the one route I saw that, you know, I could make a decent living for myself and, you know, make an impact in their lives. And so, yeah, I wanted to be an occupational therapist. I was pre-OT at Iowa. And once music started coming around, I was like, I could go into a shit ton more debt and go to grad school, or I could, you know, play in bars every weekend and, you know, maybe make a living there. And so, I wanted to be an occupational therapist.
That's wild. That is wild. I am, as someone who is trying to figure things out for myself in my own entrepreneurial ventures, it excites me that you have the opportunity to go do that and try and make it for yourself. And I'm sure I know it's exciting as hell for you, because you get to you just get to figure it out on your own. And it's like the Wild West. Every day is a new thing. Man, that's awesome. Kevin, do you have anything else for Dallas? I mean, that's the story. Cause the story's still being written. We're early. We're like chapter one. We're in the table of contents right here.
I played my first show a month ago.
I saw you were at Elroy's downtown.
I played that first show, and then they just call me every time they have an opening. And so, yeah, I've played there probably 6-7 times now.
That's awesome.
So, when's the next time going to be?
Next time will be Tuesday. I actually played there 2 nights ago. I opened up for a guy named Bobby McClendon. He's got a song in the top 40 of country music charts. Jeez. Dude, he's gonna be really good. He's actually one of my buddies. I actually got up on stage and sang with him. You know, after my show. So after my show, I started drinking. I had a few too many, but it was a good time.
Wow. I well, I think that I think Hawkeye Nation is is really, really glad that 5 years ago Coach Morgan decided to bring you on, and I think that you could do some really exciting things. That wave song is incredible. I know a ton of people have like brought up the idea of you playing in Kinnick after a game.
That'd
like when things come back, we will be the biggest proponent of getting a Dallas Jacobus live performance of the We Wave song in Kinnick Stadium, which you don't need our help. You could just, you know, you could also just text like, hey, can I do this? But we'll be fully behind that. If you guys out there are listening, again, I'm going to play the song at the end of this podcast, but follow Dallas, tell them where to follow you at so they know when your shows are, when they can come out and see you.
Yeah, I post most of my stuff on Instagram. It's Dallas_Jacobus66. Dallas is spelt a little weird. It's Dalles. So, you know, if you miss it, that's where you miss it. But yeah, I post all my stuff on Instagram and Twitter. I think I have the same handle there.
Cool.
You know, not, you can look me up on Facebook too, but I'm not too active there.
Awesome. Well, episode 194 of the podcast, Dallas Jacobus, everybody. Dallas, thank you for coming on. It was a pleasure having you.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man.
We're excited to continue to listen, and you do great stuff. So thank you for being a Hawkeye. We are proud to call you a former teammate and brother. Thank you guys out there for listening, and stick around because we're going to exit the show here with Dallas' song. We'll be back next week on Monday with another episode. Thank you guys for listening. Peace.
It's a cool fall morning on a Saturday. There's a buzzing in the air. The boys got a home game. The whole city's gonna be there. And Kinnick starts to fill up with the hometown crowd. The speaker plays Back in Black and the boys swarm out. But the biggest fans are up above, yeah, looking over her shoulders. Sitting waiting patiently for the end of the first quarter. When we wave to the kids that cannot play, put a big smile on their face. Every football Saturday. Yeah, we wave to help those kids let go. Give the parents a little hope. Bring those kids back home. Yeah, we wave. Staying up on Friday night after a long, long week. We finally start to see a smile. There's a different energy. He wakes up at the crack of dawn, puts on his black and gold. He sits and waiting eagerly to go up to the 12th floor where he can wave. With a big smile on his face and watch the Hawkeyes play and forget about the pain. Yeah, he waves and finally lets go. Mama's got some hope that he feels at home when he waves for the boys and girls who never made it home. We won't let you go. We'll always remember you. When we wave, remember that smile on your face. You're the reason why we play. The pain's finally away. And we wave for your family back home. Never be alone. When we wave, when we wave, yeah, we wave.
Hey, everyone. everyone. I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.